You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Okay, it's not Pat. I'm sorry. This is not Pat. I am indeed Parker Olson. I'm his producer. I'm sorry to disappoint, but that's okay, because it's not just me. We also have the wonderfully talented Brittany Merlot here to bring us the weather.
Hey.
How are you doing, Brittany?
Pretty good. I wish there was more sunshine out there, but, you know, we have to deal with it anyways.
Yeah. More sunshine is always good. I was kind of happy, though, yesterday that I did not really have to worry about sunburn at the Brewer game, so that was very nice.
True.
So,
I guess there are positives where you can.
Yeah, yeah. There are happy little spots if you just think a little deeper. That's all I always
Exactly. Now, if there's happy little spots, if you want the AC for free, it's 55 degrees right now up north. But if you want the heat, still hanging on. Down south, 77 degrees. So a big spread temperature-wise across the state. It is mostly cloudy out there. Some spots of fog, still patchy, especially areas southwest and towards Wisconsin Rapids, too. Now, we are looking at light rain rolling back in, especially northwest, likely later this morning. And then, of course, a push of heat still down south. 85 degrees into La Crosse area, near 90 until Milwaukee, Richland Center, Madison, and of course, with all that heat and humidity still hanging on down south and the front still draped over the state, we're going to see more storms sparking up this afternoon. And of course, some could be strong to severe. These want to start around 2 o'clock to about 4 o'clock is where you really start to see them spark up, kind of increasing there. And then another line wants to push through and start to move around 8. So as that moves in towards La Crosse, it'll head towards Madison and Milwaukee around 10 to about midnight or so. And of course, we are looking at some of these strong to severe. The biggest risk, I think, with that line is going to be some high damaging wind gusts, which of course could knock down some trees, do some damage with that, and power outages are possible. But we also have a slight risk for tornadoes, probably right around 4 to 8 o'clock or so. And really, that risk is just west of Madison into the Richland Center area. So please be careful out there as we go through the day today. Otherwise, after this front passes late tonight, we're going to actually sit pretty comfortable tomorrow. Temperatures will be reasonable. They'll be summery still, but the humidity will be less. It'll be a pretty fantastic day with partial sunshine before more rain chances start to roll through the weekend. But the weekend's warm. It's summery. It's going to be good. Really no big concerns.
There we go. Looking for a good weekend. I like it.
Yeah.
Those tornado chances are reminding me of a friend of mine that was showing me a video the other day that he had clouds above his house that were doing the whole little starting to swirl thing on him.
Uh-oh.
And he's become a big storms guy in the last like year. I think that his girlfriend said to him that he should become a meteorologist. He's like, no, I'm not that smart. I can't do that. That's real science.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting too, when you make it your career, it's still a fun passion, but it's so much fun to have as a hobby though. Honestly, storm watching, cloud watching. I mean, we do this as a kid, right? The puffy cumulus clouds, we're like, ooh, that one looks like a fish or something. I don't know. But yeah, when they're swirling, things get a little nerve-wracking, and those chances are again today. So eyes to the sky, but stay safe.
Yeah, stay safe. He was saying, this is very cool, but also I'm a little worried right now. This isn't awesome.
I know. I grew up in the garage with my father just sitting there watching the storms come through. So it's a Midwestern thing for sure.
Yes, absolutely. We've got a tree that we actually just took down. And I realized for the first time, I think in my life, I can see the sky when I go to bed because it's always loomed over the trees, always covered my view of the sky. And now I'm just like, I guess I can see the weather now when I wake up. That's good.
That's perfect. Did a storm take that tree limb down or did you choose to do so?
Sort of. So over time, the tree started to split a little bit. And had so much rain that water has gone into there and has started to rot down into the stump.
Oh.
And we were going to trim the tree ourselves, but couldn't do it. And brought somebody in to trim it, and they said they won't trim it because the vibrations might make it split and fall on our house.
Oh, no.
So they just took the tree down instead. So
the whole thing.
Whole thing. We lost three trees because of this.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I'll never forget one morning. I was living up in Superior, Wisconsin, and a storm came through. And this tree in my backyard, the limb fell onto the power lines and set on fire. So there was a fire in my own backyard from the storms, and it was just going, going, going. And I kept that limb. Oh, I still have it to this day.
That's
burned
cool.
Tree
that's
limb.
Very cool. Let's bring in Chad Holmes here. Chad, have you had any tree adventures with the weather?
No, I don't think I've ever had an issue with a tree falling in terms of like the backyard or anything like that in my life. I've been lucky in that respect, and but heard plenty of stories. And my favorite tree falling in the backyard story is in The Natural, the movie The Natural, when Roy Hobbs is a kid and they has the big storm and the lightning bolt goes and then he makes his Wonder Boy bat. That's my favorite lightning strikes down a tree story. So.
I love it. I have never seen this, and now that is what I'm doing tonight. Thank you, Chad.
The Natural. Yep, and it's right at the beginning of the movie. So even if you don't want to watch the whole movie, you can just watch the beginning of the movie.
There you go.
Yeah.
Add it to the watch list. All right, Brittany, thanks so much for doing the weather, as always.
Thank you.
Have a good rest of your day.
And I guarantee you, Parker, that you probably haven't seen the movie either, right?
Nope.
I could tell from both of you that I am putting one of these back right low old man moments in there, because I could tell, holy cow, I'm talking about a movie that came out in 1984. So it's like, I think this is way before both your time. So
you both
faked it very well for me. I'll give you that.
I hate to inform you that I was born in 2003.
Oh, man.
But hey, it's been a good day.
My hip just got hurt. The arthritis in my hip here.
Whenever anyone reminds you about the age, it's just ooh.
Hey, I still like my goal here is for as long as I can go, and I've been very fortunate. I think it's good genes for my parents. The people tend to think that I look younger than I am, so I'm going to try to continue that. That's okay. my goal in life, that I'll be 93 years old and they'll say, boy, you don't look a day over 88.
And you'll still have Pat's hair.
There you go.
Well, it's been a really good day for young pitchers. Paul Skeens, well, maybe not so much for Paul Skeens, but Mizorowski was having quite the day yesterday. Did you have a chance to sneak out of work a little bit and watch some Brewer baseball?
I did not see it, but I read up on the game. And actually, the thing about yesterday's game is so disappointing is I was hoping to see the Phenom tomorrow, because actually I'm going down to Milwaukee tomorrow night.
Oh.
Got some friends, and we're going to go down and see the Brewers against the worst team in baseball, the Colorado Rockies. But, you know, it's like our Luke Mathers, I had a meeting with him a couple weeks ago. He says, yeah, you know, you're between the seasons here. You know, we do have a few tickets that you can go down there and see the Brewers. I thought, well, okay, let's do that. And said, okay, on a Friday night, they're playing Colorado. But
might not be the greatest game ever, but it'll be a game.
And also, they have a Nelly concert afterwards.
Oh, there we go.
It's hot out here. So a Nelly concert after the game. But no, I'm looking forward to that. But I mean, it's amazing. I mean, this kid, Jacob Mizorowski, I still have a hard time with the name. I read an article comparing him to Paul Skeens actually yesterday. And, you know, in terms of where he releases, one of the keys is he's got this, where he releases the ball is so much closer to the plate than almost anybody else in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And it's less time to get, you know, for the batter to pick up on it. I mean, he's number one in the big leagues in terms of that, the wingspan.
Yeah.
So
he's 6'7", I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I was really hoping to get a chance to see him in person, but unfortunately the rotation did not work out. But that was actually an incredible pitching matchup. I mean, yes. You don't see that very often.
No. Yesterday. I was lucky enough that my schedule worked out this week that I had the time to be able to go actually yesterday. So I did get those tickets from Luke Mathers. Buddy of mine and I went, and we were both laughing because at one point, Miz struck out a guy with five pitches that were all over 100 miles an hour. It's just ridiculous.
But also in this article that I saw, it had a picture of him and a picture of Skeens. It had a picture of Mizorowski throwing, actually right when the ball was about to release, and you could see in his arm, some, you know, like almost ligaments or whatever you see in an arm. And I'm thinking, he's not lasting. I mean, those pictures are like, holy cow. When you throw it that hard all the time and you look at the picture at the point where he's releasing it, it just looks like his arm is going to explode. And it's like, ugh.
No,
I hope that I know that these pitchers, they go out and they're basically told, hey, go as long as you can, as hard as you can. And again, showing my old man guy back in the day.
I'm with you on this. But
pitchers would go up and down. You know, they would pitch the contact. They would try to go 7-8 innings, but not be throwing 100 miles per hour every single pitch. And I think that's bad for the pitchers. I think it's bad for baseball as well, because I'd like to see a few of these guys go deeper into the games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am totally with you on that. And I think you could see that a little bit yesterday with Miz, because first inning, he was pumping gas. But after that, I don't know if he hit 100 more than two or three times after that first inning. So you could definitely see A, that fatigue, and B, also, I don't think he's had the same amount of rest as he normally would have. I think he's previously had like a week or so, and now he's doing like 5 days or so. So it's a little different.
But, I mean, he looks like an amazing talent. I mean, talk about excitement. I mean, Brewers have this knack. They seem to be able to, you know, develop players, and they're able to find the right guys. Again, great credit to the front office and their scouts and everybody else, because even when they tend to lose a few guys, they seem to have that pipeline that continues. And I'm, again, pleasantly surprised to see where they are. I mean, they're within two games of the Cubs, and boy, I mean, it looks like it could be a very fun summer.
Absolutely could be. How's the summer going up in Wausau? I know you guys have got Wausau Woodchucks, Wausau Ignite. Really excited to hear about the Ignite, actually, with that new softball team up there.
It's a lot of fun to have. I just love the aspect of having these opportunities for both boys and girls. And also, it's great to have, because one of the things about the Northwoods League, it's all about the families, about going out there to the games. And I think for young girls, especially, to be able to see the potential of what you're able to do. If you have the skill, if you have the passion, if you have the opportunity now to be able to see some of these young ladies in action, along with the guys as well. And Northwoods League is this great family entertainment, and they've done it so very well here in Wausau, and I know down in Madison and other areas as well over the years. But then to add this softball aspect, I know there's been a lot of excitement with that, and there's been a lot of people that have really enjoyed it. And we're very lucky to have that kind of entertainment right here in Wausau.
Absolutely. You have any plans to get out to any of those games coming up here?
I'm hoping to. You know, it's like, you know, this is like the short time frame where I have a little time off, and actually in a week I'm heading off on vacation. So I'm thinking that this is the time to start doing some of those things that you really want to do.
There you go. Where are you headed?
I'm heading to Vegas.
Oh, that's right, for your poker.
I'm playing in the World Series of Poker.
I'm very excited.
Going to play in the main event this year. Bucket list item. So a week away.
I like it. We will chronicle those adventures in a couple of weeks when you are back from your trip.
I think that'd be great.
Chad Holmes from Wausau. Thank you so much for joining the show, Chad.
You bet. Thank you, Parker.
All right. We are going to be right back in a little bit here, and we will bring in a interview with, I cannot remember who, to be perfectly honest with you, but hey, you're going to keep listening to the show, and you're going to hear from Sean O'Malley about the money. Here we go.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. It's 8:22 now and time for our weekly visit with Sean O'Malley, a finance compliance economics expert. And we're going to be talking about the impact of Iran on your money in the markets this week. Sean, hello. How are you?
Pat, good morning. Yeah, doing fairly well, I guess, as can be expected now that we have some at least interim stability in the financial marketplace after a little bit of back and forth with missiles and such between Israel, Iran, and us finally dropping some of the big equipment.
Yes, and I chuckle at the whole notion of, you know, temporary stability is probably the best way to describe almost everything that has happened in this administration to this point, that things go crazy and then they settle down for a bit, but nobody really knows what's coming next. So, I mean, I've seen the headlines about, you know, what's happened with oil prices and stock prices, but I have to think your first note of caution is that, you know, things could still go in any given direction when it comes to markets these days.
Yeah, that's probably a good way of assessing it. We're really sitting on top of what is now probably an even larger powder keg. I mean, we already had the tariffs. We know that some sort of decision is supposed to be made here coming up on July 9th. So what's going to happen? We don't know. No tipping of the hand, no inkling of what's going to be happening there. And it's a similar situation with the sort of not only the political intrigue as well as the offsetting financial intrigue with Iran. We know that there is a temporary ceasefire between Iran and Israel, but we've also seen what the market's reaction was, both in terms of the stock markets as well as oil. Stock markets went down, you know, quite a bit, and then very quickly the ceasefire was announced, so that seemed to sort of mitigate that impact. However, there's one important fact that a lot of people need to keep in mind, and that is that Iran has basically said that they are going to be restricting any oil shipments out of the Strait of Hormuz. So the Strait of Hormuz is basically at the bottom end of the Persian Gulf, and it is waters largely controlled by them. And that means that about 20% of the world's oil is not going to be going anywhere outside of the Persian Gulf area. Normally, those shipments would go through the Strait of Hormuz and then out to the rest of the world, but that will no longer be happening, not only for Iran, but every other oil-producing nation that are also on the Persian Gulf, such as Kuwait.
But we're talking about, you know, something like 700 vessels that go through the Strait, at least last week there was, before the strikes took place. And yet, Sean, I keep hearing that, you know, from drill baby drill and everything else, that we're somehow no longer going to be reliant on what passes through the Strait of Hormuz. But I'm rather skeptical of thinking that we're now somehow, you know, immune from oil supply shocks that would come from that sensitive part of the world.
Yeah, I think that expecting that the sort of drill baby drill mentality and, you know, because we're producing more than we ever have, which is true, that we are somehow energy independent and that it's not going to impact prices is very naive and is not really looking at the larger picture. The larger picture really is the globe. If you shut off 20% of the supply coming in to the entire globe, that is going to have an impact, whether you are energy independent or not. You know, prices will go up everywhere. And that's something that the American consumer should be prepared to see in that impact at the pump. There will be, some inflation due to this. And remember, we talked about the last time we talked about inflation, we talked about how the number was actually lower than expected. And that was largely due to the core inflation number, which is really driven largely by fuel costs, was much lower than expected. Now, however, I think we're going to be looking at rising fuel costs, so expect that inflation number to start going up in the future.
What about the sanctions that had been imposed on Iran? And, I mean, there are some personal and business Trump considerations that are at play here as well.
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of tentacles to this that we can get into. We don't have enough time for all of them today, but let's just cover a couple of them at a very high level. One is, remember the invasion plans that were leaked by accident, you know, that were targeting what country? Iran. So that was, that's sort of tentacle number one. Tentacle number two is that Trump has a personal relationship going back with Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, dating back to the late 1980s when Netanyahu was Israel's representative to the United Nations. Happened to meet Trump's father, Fred Trump Sr., and therefore became friends with Donald. And that has been the case. So, you know, we're talking about an interpersonal relationship that goes back over 35 years, as well as, yes, as you point out, sanctions that have been in place for years and years and years against Iran, particularly in the, you know, for the U.S. However, remember that Europe doesn't have them in place. So it really kind of is a, you know, we are the ones that have been a big obstacle for Iran, much less the nations in Europe.
So really, I mean, again, bottom line is there has been this attack. We still don't really know the full degree to which Iran's nuclear capabilities have been harmed. And because the sanctions aren't exactly level, we're going to end the segment kind of as we began. Don't assume anything with the current situation right now. Things could still go in any direction. And so, you know, whether we're talking about, you know, the markets or just the eye that we keep on things, you know, you've got to watch every day what kind of developments are taking place in that part of the world.
Exactly. And the watchword is that things are about as good as they could get right now. So worry about what could possibly go wrong at this point.
Lots of room there.
Yeah, I wish I had happier news.
Yeah, no. That's all right. We understand. It's how we got to check in on these things, because otherwise it's when you get complacent that things go wrong with your money and the markets. Sean O'Malley, thank you so much. Appreciate the visit as always.
Thanks, Pat.
You bet. We'll talk to Sherita Booker coming up later this half hour. But first, Melissa Baldoff, right after this. You're up north. Well, welcome back. It is a Thursday morning, and we're happy to welcome in Melissa Baldoff with a little climate check. And there's good news, and there's always not so good news given what's happening in D.C. But like I said, some good news mixed in with it. Melissa, hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, very good. Thanks. As we're recording this, you are at a workshop in the Madison area, and it's got a very ambitious agenda of the people that you're bringing together to talk about climate policy. What can you tell us about it?
Yes. So this was a really great convening hosted by America is All In and Forward Together Wisconsin. And it was an opportunity to bring together leaders from across state and local government, academia, business, you know, philanthropy, the advocacy world, you name it, to talk about how all different sectors can work together to advance ambitious climate policy and implementation in Wisconsin. We know, unfortunately, we're not going to be getting a whole lot of help from the federal government right now, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we're going to press pause for the next 3.5 years and not do anything. We're going to think about and focus on what can we accomplish here in the state, whether that's at the state level, at the local level, whether that's encouraging the private sector to step up and do their part, encouraging philanthropy to still be funding some of these projects that aren't going to be getting funding from the federal government anymore. So it was a really great opportunity to have those conversations and bring together people who maybe wouldn't normally cross paths with one another.
Well, and as we've discussed here in this segment previously, you don't always have friendly people in, you know, the White House or the governor's mansion or, you know, the assembly, the Senate, the House, the Senate in Washington. But there are still things that you can do. There are plans you can make, discussions you can have for when the environment changes. And that's as important as ever, given the times we're living in right now. And so let's start with that. Let's get the bad news out of the way first. And that deals with the Trump administration about to end protections for 58 million acres of national forests. And this, of course, is from the Agriculture Secretary, Brooke Rollins, who has little to no agricultural experience, and said that, you know, these rules from the Clinton era in the 90s that bar road construction and logging in certain areas are, in her words, outdated and absurd. It seems to me what's absurd is ending protections on 58 million acres of national forest, Melissa.
Yes, it's, you know, one of those, again, situations where we've talked before, you know, how these unqualified people are in these positions of power, making these, helping to make these really dangerous decisions that are going to impact our, you know, our country for years and years to come. And, you know, it, besides the fact that, you know, just the idea of our national forest, I think everybody can get behind just that idea. But also that natural infrastructure is really important to our resilience and to having resilient communities. So anytime we see attacks on that, you know, natural infrastructure happening at the federal level, especially, you know, that's just a signal to other communities that maybe they could do the same thing. So it's not just the attack at the federal level. It's the message that it's sending, you know, downstream to, you know, maybe some places that don't have advocates in state government, like a Tony Evers, who would say this ain't happening in Wisconsin, or some local communities who are saying, hey, well, maybe we're going to, maybe we're not going to protect our natural infrastructure either. So I think it's a really dangerous precedent that they're setting, you know, and setting that example too for others.
Well, I'm glad you talked about the downstream impact of this, because, and I will admit this is relatively apples and oranges, but when we've talked about the Knowles Nelson stewardship program here in Wisconsin, we certainly know as well that there are lawmakers, including those from up north, who, if not outright hostile to the program and to land conservation, certainly are much more on the side of, you know, development, and development that doesn't necessarily follow a plan. So we know that there are those voices out there, but thankfully we've had people over the years, like President Clinton back in the day when he did this. It was said back at the time, it was the most significant step since Theodore Roosevelt laid the foundation for the national forest system by, you know, blocking the logging, the road building, the mining, the drilling on these 58 million acres. And, you know, as has been noted, the timber industry isn't exactly itching to go into some of these areas. They're expensive, they're controversial. And so whether you're talking at the federal level or the state level, there are politicians that love to open these things up, but that does not always mean the private sector wants to jump right into these things. They're aware of how the politics works out there.
Yep, they sure are. And I think it's, you know, it's just a, you know, another, it's another sign of the overreach of this administration, that they always want to do, you know, the most harm the fastest they can. They're not consulting experts. They're not really listening even to what, you know, business leaders, you know, they say they're so pro-business, they say they want to grow the economy. We've seen quite the opposite, frankly. And they're making decisions that are, you know, not only bad for the environment, bad for our health, they are bad for business as well.
Now, there are other business decisions that are made that are good moves, and they can also be incentivized, like when the Biden administration was in office. And then we wait to see if businesses will still carry through with these good deeds if the tax incentive goes away. Specifically in this case, Melissa, we're talking about Ford, and they're saying now, Ford Motor Company, saying that even though Republicans are trying to go after these clean energy tax breaks, they are still planning to open up a new battery factory in Michigan, even without the federal incentives. And I mean, Melissa, that tells us right there that there's still something to be said for the market, that consumers want cleaner burning cars, and that while the tax incentives, you know, they're still going to fight for them, but they still feel like there's a market there for doing what we would think of as the right thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, that's what the market demands. And, you know, I think that you hear that from, you know, executives with large corporations, you hear it from labor leaders, you hear it from developers, even at the local level, who are saying, this is the future, this is where we're headed, and this is what consumers want to see. And clearly, people who are actually good at business and don't bankrupt everything they touch understand that. They understand how to make decisions based on what is going to respond to their consumers' needs and what is going to be profitable. And, you know, when you have somebody in charge who is a failed business person and is running this country like the businesses he's bankrupted, it's no surprise that, you know, that they're failing to make good decisions. But I think that it's really telling and it's really encouraging, frankly, that we're still seeing some of these investments move forward, despite the fact that the federal government is going to back away from the promise that was made. And I really thought it was a great statement out of the folks at Ford, from an executive with Ford, Lisa Drake, who said to the New York Times, we don't want to back off on this facility. When we invest, we stick behind our investments. Ford is a company that will weather the storm until we get there. And imagine if we could say the same for our federal government, that the Republicans who are in charge now would honor the promises, the commitments, the investments that were made in this country, in our workers, in our economy. If only they would continue those, we would be looking at a much better and brighter future.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, you also hear from a director with the United Auto Workers Union talking about the irony that thousands of battery workers just voted to unionize. So their jobs are going to be high quality, family supporting. And now those same congressional Republicans are voting to kill the jobs that were created by President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. But as mentioned, Ford's going to go forward with this plant about 100 miles west of Detroit, a $3 billion plant to continue moving us toward a greener and cleaner economy. One more story that I wanted to pick up on, and this one is under the category of I still can't believe this is a thing. And for me, the thing is plastic bags. So I'm going to give you the story, and then I'm going to tell a little personal story. The story is that, you know, there's a new study out there that shows that plastic bag bans work, that they do help to limit the amount of shoreline litter in places where this has been studied. So now here's the personal wrinkle to it. When I moved to Grand Cayman Island back in 2014, I was just kind of amazed at the lack of plastic bags, that everybody was expected to bring their own canvas bags, and that if you wanted the plastic bags, you'd have to pay a nickel for each of them. Now, a nickel's not that much, but just that little thing, it wasn't an outright ban, but just that little thing like a nickel got people thinking, do I really need the plastic bags? No, it turns out they don't. So whether it's a ban or a financial incentive to use your own bags, these things work. There are easy answers out there, Melissa.
Absolutely. Anything we can do to incentivize people doing the right thing and make it easier for them to do the right thing is going to be a great path forward. And, you know, sometimes it really is, you know, a matter of, like you said, just that little bit of financial incentive, just that reminder, not that it's for most people going to be a big deciding factor. Or it could just be the social pressure, right? We know that social pressure is something that works. So if you see everybody else bringing their bags, and you're thinking, well, I don't want to be the one who has to buy one because I didn't bring mine. It's just that reminder that this is a small thing you can do, but all of those small things can really add up and make a difference. And, you know, I've not lived anywhere with a plastic bag ban, but I have visited places that have them, and it's really fine. But I also know, though, I have been to other places, though, that don't offer bags anymore. You know, or they only sell you one. You know, my teenagers and I are frequent Goodwill shoppers. We all like to thrift, and Goodwill doesn't give you bags anymore. If you want a bag, you got to bring your own. And it certainly hasn't stopped my teenagers from buying a whole bunch of stuff from there. And you know, I think that's just how you get used to things. You take a little bit of personal responsibility, and you know, it can make a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, it really builds on yourself. The nonprofit, the Ocean Conservancy, analyzed 45,000 different shoreline cleanups between 2016 and 2023. And I know, because I've been part of these in places as well, where you spend a couple of hours on the beach, and not like beaches, but, you know, places that aren't developed. And there's just so much litter that comes in off the oceans. And they sampled nearly 200 local and state policies that regulated plastic shopping bags, and found that places that adopted plastic bag policies reduced the amount of plastic bag litter on the shoreline from 25 to 50%. And what a difference that is from, like, for example, when I went on a mission trip to Mexico many years earlier, and every little scrubby tree in this village had more plastic bags on the branches than they had leaves. It was just so bad. And it's just so nice to see these things work. I'd love to see more of this around the States, if we could just get out of, you know, if we could kick that plastic bag habit.
I think that would be great.
Melissa Baldoff with this week's Climate Check. Melissa, thank you so much for checking in. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
For some of you, a local update is next. For others, we'll talk to Sherita Booker about weekend events. I'm Pat Kreitlow. We'll see you tomorrow morning here up north.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Now it's time to check in on things that you can do this weekend with Sherita Booker, social media manager at Up North News, and also the keeper of the community calendar, I guess you could call it. Hey, Sherita, how are you?
Good, Pat. How are you?
Good. How did you beat the heat last weekend? Did you go to any festivals? Did you just sit in a kiddie pool all day? Or did you foolishly engage in some kind of sports activity?
I did that for a little bit. I played pickleball on Saturday morning, and it was so hot. Everybody was just complaining. But then we came home to our air conditioners and just laid up.
That makes sense. Go do something just long enough so that when you come home, you appreciate the air conditioning and never leave it for the rest of the weekend. I could totally see doing that. All right. It won't be like that this weekend. And so for folks who are going to get out and about, here are several ideas for you. It's Wisconsin. Let's start with cheese. We got the Cheese Curd Festival going on in Ellsworth.
Yep. And that's kicking off this Saturday and Sunday at East End Park. And there will be a range of classic fresh curds and deep fried flavors like buffalo, garlic, jalapeno, bacon. And this year's feature is hot honey. You can also try some of their tastings like beer and curds, milk and cookie pairings for the kids, and a Cedar Crest ice cream tasting. And of course, there will be live music and shopping, and the event wouldn't be complete without a cheese curd eating contest, which will be held Saturday at 2 p.m. And this event is free, so bring the whole family. And for more details, visit cheesecurdfestival.com.
Oh my goodness, hot honey. Wow.
Sounds good.
That's what they ought to do, is a hot honey cheese curd eating contest. Let's just make it a real challenge here. And I'm looking at the food truck list here. We got barbecue, we got tacos, grandma's cookies, Holy Donuts is going to be there, corn dogs and fritters. So if you think this is just about cheese curds, you need to think again. Closer to your neck of the woods in the southeastern part of the state, the Cedarburg Strawberry Festival. That thing has really taken off over the years and is quite popular.
Yep, that's coming up this Saturday and Sunday. And this is also another free family event. So in addition to fresh strawberries, there will be strawberry-themed food like a strawberry brat, strawberry chicken salad wraps, strawberry shortcakes, strawberry crepes, strawberry wine, and tons of other local food and vendor marketplaces. And if you're bringing the kids, there will be an entire party in the park at Cedar Creek Park that will include a bounce house, petting zoo, bumper boats, face painting, and a live mermaid and balloon performance. And you can get more info about that at cedarburgfestivals.org.
Yeah, if you go to cedarburgfestivals.org, you'll be like, wait, is that the one I went to before? Maybe not. Maybe it was the Wine and Harvest Festival, the Oktoberfest, the Winter Festival, the Cedarburg Christmas. They've got them all lined up just at this one website for all of your festival needs in beautiful Cedarburg. All right, let's come back over to the western side of the state for this weekend's Toma Tractor Pull.
And they're celebrating their 50th anniversary this year. And that's today through Sunday in Toma. The top pullers from the U.S. and Canada will be competing for the Super National titles. And on Friday from 9 a.m. to noon, kids ages 14 and under can explore the pits, meet the drivers, get a free t-shirt, and also a free ticket to the noon session. So if you want to spend the weekend there, they do have an on-camping site ground across the street with tent and trailer options. And admission to the grounds is free, but showtime tickets range from $28 to $55. And season tickets are $126 online and $130 at the gate. They are expecting over 70,000 visitors. So if you want to grab your tickets early, head to tomatractorpull.com.
And because it notes here, there are broadcasting contracts, and so video cameras are not going to be allowed. So just, you know, put it down and enjoy. Enjoy the event as it goes on with, and all of the goings on around it happening this weekend in Toma. There is more, of course. County fairs are getting underway. So you've got the Marquette County Fair, which is going to get going in Westfield. Well, is underway, I should say. And that's going to run through Sunday. Then there's the Outagamie County Fair in Seymour that got its start on Wednesday. And then it will run through Sunday. And there's also the Door County North Pollinator Week Celebration. I don't know how we could have missed this one, Sharita, but it's happening in Ellison Bay.
What are they doing there?
Well, they're celebrating all the pollinators, of course.
Food, beer, wine, what?
I would imagine so. Let's see. You head over to, I got this off the Travel Wisconsin website, and what they've been doing there is there's been like a scavenger hunt throughout the course of the week, and then on Saturday there will be a parade that begins at 10 and then ends at the Ellison Bay Community Center. There will be food, there will be drinks, there will be games, music, crafts, and what's called a Bestminster dog show. Not the Westminster dog show, but the Bestminster dog show. So all kinds of attractions there for the, again, Door County North Pollinator Week celebration. Any of these appeal to you, or are you going to be lying low this weekend?
I was thinking about going to the Cedarburg Strawberry Fest. We'll see. I'll report back next week. But I did go like 12 years ago, and it was a good time. I know that's a long time, but...
But that's why I mentioned that it started rather small and has really grown since that time in popularity. So, I mean, you like a lot of these things, you won't be alone. But if you pack your patience and, get some good parking, you can eventually go in and, you know, forget about the process to get there and just focus on the process of enjoying yourself while you're there. And then looking way ahead on the schedule, just because I want people thinking about it, we're going to get through 4th of July next week. And then the following week, July 9th through the 13th, will be the Northern Wisconsin State Fair right here in beautiful Chippewa Falls. And so for these and many other events that we're tracking throughout the summer, just keep her tuned right here to these mornings powered by Up North News. And Sharita Booker will tell us all about them each and every week. Sharita, thank you so much. Hope you have a great start to the weekend.
You too, Pat.
Hold on. Wait a minute. Did she say strawberry brats? She did. Look at this, from Foxtown Heritage Meats. All right, strawberry brats. I've heard it all. Hey, tomorrow we'll have our Week in Review panel. We'll have Kristen Lyerly. We'll have Mike Clemens talking about sports. But coming up next, Matt and Air on Air with Jim Santel at 9:30, Brittany Merlot at 10:20, Paul Noonan from the Acme Packing Company at 10:35. I'm Pat Kreitlow, founding editor of Up North News, the Wisconsin home for Courier Newsroom, a pro-democracy news network building a more informed, engaged, representative America. Follow us at upnorthnewswi.com. Have a great Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. here up north.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community.
Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.